Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. Madam Secretary is the 23rd Secretary of the Air Force and is responsible for the affairs of the Department of the Air Force, including the organizing, training, equipping, and providing the welfare of its nearly 664,000 active duty, Guard, Reserve, and civilian airmen and their families. She also oversees the Air Force's annual budget of more than $139 billion. Madam Secretary, first, let me just take a moment and thank you for joining us here at Women of Washington.
Thank you, Aileen. It's my pleasure to be here.
Secretary James, let's begin with your background. I know that you grew up in New Jersey, but I don't know much else. Most all of the successful women that we talk to on the show have a person or an event that was a major inspiration in their life growing up. So who or what was your biggest influence or inspiration?
Well, as a young girl living in Rumson, New Jersey, that's my hometown, I think my biggest inspiration in those early days was my older sister. And the reason was that everything that she had and everything that she was doing, I wanted to do too. And the biggest thing that she was doing, which was so inspiring and so exciting to me, was travel. She worked for American Airlines and as a result had the opportunity, and I'm going back here 35, 40, 45 years, to travel frequently. And to most middle-class families back then, it was not so easy to travel. And I got to go once a year with her as a result of those free passes from American Airlines.
What is she doing now? Does she still work for the airlines or?
She no longer works for the airlines and no longer works in the travel industry. She's now a realtor still living in New Jersey, but we're still very close.
Because I was wondering if maybe now she is wishing that she could do what you do.
Well, I invite her all the time to Washington and I say, if you can figure out this budget agreement, hats off to you.
Secretary James, you have a Bachelor's of Arts degree in Comparative Area Studies from Duke and a Master's degree in International Affairs from Columbia. Was it always your plan to pursue a career supporting the military or being part of the military community?
It actually was never my idea as a young person. I mentioned my love of travel and how my sister inspired me. My original dream as a young person was I wanted to be a diplomat. I wanted to go into the State Department. I did want to work on policy matters in the government, which were important security matters in that regard. So that's true. But I was very much State Department and foreign language focused.
So you came to D.C. expecting to be a foreign officer, and all of a sudden, yeah, I think you used this term, you're zig and you're zagged. And so what happened?
So what happened was I came to Washington thinking that I had checked every box. I had taken the right courses in school. I had the right internships under my belt. I spoke a foreign language fluently. I came and I applied to the State Department, and I received a letter in the mail, which was a letter of rejection. So for whatever reason, they did not select me for the job, and it was crushing. It was a crushing blow to someone who at that point was 23 years old. And I, as I recall, I cried for several days over this because I saw my life flashing before my eyes and I didn't know what to do. But then on about the fourth or fifth day, I realized I had to have a job. And so I started applying elsewhere in the government because, again, I did want to work on policy matters and something that was bigger and more important than just my individual interests and my little individual perspective on life. And so I luckily got a job with the Department of the Army. That was my very first job as a civilian. It was the world of national defense, to which I'd had no exposure other than my dad, who had been a World War II veteran. But like so many of his generation, he didn't speak to me very much about his military experience. So I had no exposure, no particular interest, but it was a job. And I was so grateful at that point to have a job. And so I gave it my best. And then a few months into it, the most remarkable things started happening. Number one, it was really, really interesting. And it was working on issues of major importance to the nation, something much, much bigger than myself. Number two, I really like the people that I work with. I was lucky enough to fall into a great team. Number three, I had a fantastic boss who became one of my very first mentors in life, who took an interest in me and helped open some doors for me that eventually led to other opportunities. And so all of that began 34 years ago, and every job that I have had since that initial job has been in the area of national defense. And I like to look back now and say, thank you, State Department, that you did not pick me, because I cannot imagine I would have had a more fulfilling career than the one I've had. And it all started with a great big bust.
So, Secretary James, early in your career, I think right after the Army job, you spent the next 10 years on Capitol Hill working with the House Armed Services Committee. So tell us a little bit, first of all, of what it was like to work on the Hill at that time.
Well, I was one of a small, very small group of women. And I was by far the youngest on the committee staff, and youngest by 15 years, perhaps. So I was considerably younger, and I was not an expert on national defense. As I mentioned, I was really brand new in my career. And I was hired principally because of networking, because of that original mentor who opened a door. They tried me out as an intern. I was a good writer and a good researcher. So I think those were my top skills, and I was trainable because I was young. And I think I was also kind of inexpensive because I was young. So for all of those reasons, I landed the job. But 10 years later, I had acquired quite a lot of competence, quite a lot of knowledge. I had expanded my network. I had met some new mentors in life who once again helped me along the way. And so 10 years later, I was much more expert in matters of national defense.
So recently, I've heard you say that in the 34 years that you've been in this business, that it's the most divisive political environment that you've seen. The decade that you spent working on the Hill, does that now, that experience having been on the inside, help you when you're now dealing with Congress in your current role, or does it just make it more frustrating for you to have to deal with what you deal with?
That 10 years on Capitol Hill absolutely helped me big time for my current role, because I can understand and have walked in the shoes that some of the congressmen, senators, and the staffers are walking in. I can understand the political forces. I also understand procedurally how things happen and how they don't happen, how they can be blocked or how they can be facilitated on Capitol Hill. So that knowledge and how to communicate with members of Congress and senators has proven to be very valuable, particularly in a divisive environment. But I want to say recent days seem much, much more encouraging. And so we are really grateful if indeed we do get this 2-year budget agreement.
Yeah, I think that the speech that I heard you talk about, it was one that you were talking about negotiation. And you were saying that even though people might not think of your role talking to Congress as a negotiation for budget, it really is, because you have to help them understand why the money is important and what it's going to be used for. And that's a pretty important part of any negotiation, is to help the other side understand. So it seems like maybe we have averted another disastrous closing of the government and things like that. Talk a little bit about what the impact would have been had that not happened.
Well, if we do not get a budget agreement, and if we do not get an extension beyond December 11th, because of course that is when the continuing resolution runs out, the government could shut down. And this would cause hundreds of thousands of civilians to perhaps be furloughed. The military would, of course, report to work, but their appropriation would lapse and they would not get paid on time, absent some other law to make them be paid on time. And it would create, in all what is called non-essential areas, shutdowns, which, by the way, I hate that term of non-essential. People work very hard, and these are all important jobs, but this is a term that is used here in government. And we would literally have to go through person by person and decide who would go home and who would stay and be considered essential. So again, very grateful that that appears to be averted, and to have some stability for our planning purposes in national defense is also critical.
Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll hear about gender diversity in the military. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force.
Secretary James, you've talked about the good news, bad news, gender diversity statistics in the Air Force. The good news is that the Air Force is leading the Department of Defense with the highest percentage of women in service. But the bad news is that both in the non-commissioned and commissioned ranks, the higher up you go, the fewer women there are. And that, furthermore, women are exiting at twice the rate of men when they reach the midpoint of their career. So why do you think that's happening?
I think there's a number of things going on here. Number one, I think work-life balance becomes an issue. It's an issue for men and women, but I think it's a particular issue for women, particularly as they get into their 30s, perhaps their early 40s, starting to think about a family, or maybe they've already begun a family and they're finding it difficult to manage all of that. So work-life balance, I think, is an issue. I think another issue is because we have relatively few women in the upper echelons, they don't have role models at mid-career to look up to. And so they can't see enough of what success looks above them. And there's not enough mentoring, perhaps, that's going on to open the doors and show the way of how perhaps you can work out the work-life balance, as an example. And these are the kinds of assignments, perhaps, that you should consider, the types of educational experiences. So we have launched a series of initiatives that are designed to improve diversity and inclusion generally, not just women, but certainly women are a big piece of this in our Air Force. I view this not just as the right thing to do, but it's an important readiness thing to do. So the future readiness of our Air Force depends on our ability to be able to recruit and ultimately retain the very best talent that America has to offer. And in order to do that, you want the widest pool that you can possibly choose from. And that pool includes a diverse group of young Americans. So that's why diversity and inclusion is important to me. And that's why we're working on it very hard.
So what are some of the programs that the Air Force is either doing or looking to do that would improve diversity?
So first of all, looking at bringing more women in the front door, recruiting them into the force, I'll say, we are taking a number of initiatives to expand our applicant pool of women so that we have more young women to choose from, particularly in the officer corps, looking to bring them into the Air Force Academy as well as through the ROTC and the officer training school sources. So that's one thing. We're also taking some steps to open up the piloting career field in a wider way to women, make it more available so that more can compete for these jobs. Of course, being a pilot is not everything in the Air Force. There are many fine skills and career fields, but being a pilot is pretty important when you're the United States Air Force. So we'd like to open up the apertures and get more women involved. We've started a new mentoring program in the Air Force. It's called My Vector. Think of it as a match.com for those who want mentoring. They will go online, they will list their various criteria that they'd like to have in a mentor. And then people who are able to mentor similarly go online and they list what they know about. And then the computer will match you, and this way connections are made that otherwise perhaps would never be made. So personally, I'm mentoring 5 airmen through My Vector. So it's open to all. It's not just women, but we're hopeful that this will be an approach that will help retain some of our additional women. We've instituted a career intermission program whereby qualified airmen can take between 1 and 3 years worth of a sabbatical, take time off to start a family, go to school, take care of an aging parent, and then come back to us and not lose their place in line for promotion. Of course, in exchange for that, they have to stick with us. So it's a retention tool for some of our highly qualified people. So these are just some of the initiatives that we have launched. And we're also working on our pregnancy policy. So for example, prior to this time, women upon giving birth would be subject to deployment at the 6-month period. And that's a very short time, and then you might be away from a very young child halfway around the world. We've lengthened that to 1 year. Similarly, of course, we have to be physically fit in the military, in the Air Force. Prior to this time, women had to be subjected to the PT test, the physical training test, at the 6-month point. But what I was hearing as I traveled around was that women were, in some cases, starving themselves and doing unhealthy things to be able to get back in shape for that PT test at the six-month point. We've lengthened that to 1 year also. So these are reasonable accommodations, and we hope it will have an impact on retaining some of our fantastic women.
Secretary James, you recently have made some visits to your airmen in Afghanistan. My niece returned last week from a tour there. She's an Air Force major, doctor, and she has two very young children. And I know it was very, very difficult. Can you give any advice or do you have any programs around, whether it's a mom or a dad, on how to deal with being deployed and being away from your family and your young children, in this case, 2 and 4 year olds, for such a prolonged period of time?
It is a prolonged period of time, and this is an example of the type of a sacrifice that our military members make, both men and women. So my advice in this case is, first of all, when it comes to deployments, keep in touch through whatever means that you have. So nowadays, with modern communications, and we do place a high value, we as an Air Force, in making sure that our airmen have internet connections and the ability to communicate through Skype and whatnot. Back in the old days, I remember the old AT&T cards, and I think there's a certain amount of that that still goes on, the calling cards, but to keep in touch through alternate means. Of course, it's not the same, but I have two children who are now 31 and 29 years old. They're grown up, they're launched, but I yearn to be with them, and I use these same connection tools to stay in touch with their lives. That's very important. The other thing that's very important is if you're in the military and you have a family, if you have children, you must, of course, have a good backup plan. So this is true if you're at home working on a base, you need your backup plan. But even more important when you deploy. So, you know, you need a partner, you need a parent, you need a husband or a wife, you need a backup plan who is going to care for the children in your absence. So this is it's a tough balance to make. When our airmen return from deployments, we try to offer additional time off, additional downtime. Hard to do in a busy Air Force, but we make best efforts to do so to pay back just a little bit to give that downtime to be with family once again.
Changing gears a little bit here, Secretary James, you very recently gave your recommendation to Defense Secretary Ash Carter to open up those last male-only combat positions to women. So first, let me ask you, what has led you to be a proponent for women's ability to serve in combat?
First of all, I'm very proud that our Air Force is the most open of all of the services right now today. At present, we only have 6 jobs that are still closed to women, and those 6 jobs all relate to the world of special operations. They're physically demanding jobs, and they're also jobs that require a great deal of mental acuity. So these are not easy jobs, but there's only 6 that are still closed. I am confident, and I've really been confident for some time, that women can do anything. Some women can do anything. Not all of us, not all men can do all of these jobs either. But given the right preparation and given a set of gender neutral and operationally relevant standards, that once that's in place, I could see no reason why we should keep these jobs closed. Now, of course, gender neutral standards means it's the same standard, a physical or a mental standard, it's the same for a man or a woman. Operationally relevant means it must directly relate to the job at hand. And so all we need to do is read in the morning media, we have women who are Olympians, we have women who are marathon runners, we have women who have enormous strength and dexterity. And so I am certain that some women will be able to do these jobs just as some men can do these jobs, but it's not for everybody. They're very demanding and very important that we not lower standards, and we won't.
Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll ask Secretary James about her leadership philosophy. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force.
Secretary James, in an interview you recently gave, I'm going to paraphrase you, you said, build and value your network. So can you tell us first what you mean by that and maybe give us an example of how it's paid off for you in your career?
To me, building and valuing a network is all about collecting, in the best possible sense of that word, collect people throughout your life. And that's the building part. The valuing part is keep in touch with them. Look for ways to interact periodically. Don't just do it 10 years from now when you need a job. That's what I mean by building and valuing a network. So I'm blessed to have what I consider to be a very large network of friends and colleagues. And most of my friends, by the way, became my friends because we met in a work environment. I also have friends that I have made in church. I've made friends in the neighborhood, the parents of my children. So I have other outlets for friendships as well. But by far, the vast majority I have met through work. And even though we have busy lives, I keep track of what's going on in their lives. And I try to see people periodically for a dinner or a breakfast or a drink after work or a get together on the weekend. So I work the valuing part of my network. So it's paid off for me because the network has really helped me with each and every job that I have ever gotten after that very first job in the Department of the Army. Mentors have been very crucial for that as well. And the network has also helped me in times of trouble when I've needed to bounce off a problem or get some other points of view. I call my friends. They're part of my network. So it's really been a help to me both professionally and personally.
A couple of times you've mentioned mentors and great mentors that you've had in your career. Tell us a story about maybe one of those mentors. What's the best advice you've ever been given by a mentor?
Wow, I've had quite a few great ones. I'm going to tell you about a man named Kim Wincup. So Kim Wincup was my very first boss on the House Armed Services Committee. I was his intern in the early 1980s. When there became a real job opening, he then offered me the full-time job on the House Armed Services Committee. So we were together for years on the Hill. We then went our separate ways. I went on with my career, he went on with his, but we had lunch every single year without fail, and we kept up with one another. And he was valuable to me, and I like to believe that I was valuable to him. We were friends. And so 20 years after I first was the intern for Kim Wincup, we were having our annual lunch, and by now he was working for a company called SAIC. And it was Kim Wincup who essentially introduced me to a job opportunity at SAIC. And although we've talked a great deal about my government background, I also had 14 years in industry, the bulk of which was with SAIC, which is a federal services contractor doing business with the federal government, principally defense. So it's that same friend, mentor, and part of my network that opened that door that I walked through, and which was a very important part of my industry background and led to what became 12 years of experience in defense industry. And that all started with the network and with that important mentor and friend, Kim Wincup.
Secretary James, you brought up your career at SAIC where you ran, you were the president of SAIC. You know, women still represent single digits in leadership positions in boardrooms and executive positions in the Fortune 500. You broke the glass ceiling not only in the Fortune 500, but in the military too. Diversity numbers for minorities in these executive positions are even worse. You really have fostered the diversity and inclusion during your tenure in the Air Force. What advice do you have to others to help, you know, change these statistics?
Well, one of the things that I believe in is I believe in when you're interviewing for a position that is open, and let's just start with the federal government, it's important to have a diverse board of people who are looking to hire into that position. And by the way, that's another one of our diversity and inclusion initiatives that we have put in place in the Air Force when it comes to our civilian hiring at some of the higher level jobs. So what we were finding is that some of these jobs, there would frequently be people hired into them without a full look at other candidates. And all too often, the people who were hired into the job were an awful lot like the same background of the hiring authority who did the hiring in the first place. So we tend to gravitate to people who either look like us or have had similar experiences. And as, you know, our own personal biases, we're not as open, perhaps, as human beings to looking beyond. So we're requiring that discipline now in the Air Force, that we have a diverse group of people who are in turn looking at a number of candidates from diverse backgrounds and then make up your mind as to who would be the best qualified. So that's one thing, to have some discipline to do the hiring process a little differently. Another thing that I'm a believer in, we talked about the mentoring, we've talked about the networking. Another area that I think we need to explore in greater detail is we need to open up additional doors for areas of competence for different types of people. So I talked about the piloting field. All aircraft have been open to women since the early 90s, and yet we still have a relatively small percentage of women in those areas. If you look at African Americans, it's a similar story. Now, why is that so? Well, I think one area might be, or one reason might be, they don't see enough role models. They don't see enough people like themselves. They don't have enough outreach to open up those possibilities, to open up your eyes. If anybody had ever talked to me about national defense when I was a young person, it might have opened up my eyes earlier. Instead, I fell into it by mistake. But to have more role models and to have more outreach is another thing that we're trying to work on to open up some of these career areas.
So I'm a listener. I'm a young woman or a minority. What advice would you have to get one of those jobs?
Well, the best advice that I can give in that case is open up your apertures, be willing to talk to different types of people, be willing to reach out and seek that mentorship. By the way, there's programs that are established programs, but a lot of people just, you have to go and ask them for a cup of coffee. And that's the way I've always found my mentors. You see somebody that you aspire to be like, you want to know more about their background, go ask them to have a cup of coffee and tell the story. So I think you have to go on the offense. I always tell people to reach out for that mentorship. I always advise that you work very hard and become very competent at the job you're doing today. If you do so, then you're more likely to have the job of tomorrow work out for you. So if you too much think about the future and you don't become competent in what you're doing today, that can backfire. I always tell people, be very upbeat. My mother used to always say to me, nobody likes a Debbie Downer. Let's be a little upbeat in your attitude and in your outlook in life. So come prepared with, here's some solutions to the problems. Don't just tell me about your problems. So I try to remind young women about this as well. And then the importance of persistence. Sometimes things don't work out the first time, but they might the second time. Or sometimes things might not work out the first time, but that opens a different door. And there's where the importance of being able to reinvent yourself and zigzagging comes in.
Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. You know, one of the things that I was struck by as I was preparing for this interview, I went to your Facebook page, which is great, by the way. I'd urge listeners who want to learn more about what the Air Force is doing to go there. And I over the past couple of weeks, there was a video that you had posted where you were talking about how you're working to reduce energy consumption in the Air Force. There was an interview where you had been asked about what the biggest threats around the world, Russia and Syria and ISIS. And then you had sat down with the publication Space News, and you were talking about space access and space security. And as I was, I mean, this was in 14 days time span. As I was looking at these things, I thought about comparing your role to a role of a CEO of a company and where they might have to report on their quarterly earnings and all the data around that and figure out, you know, what the, you know, direction the company was going. But just, I was struck by how broad the responsibility that you have in your role and how you have to have all of this information either top of mind or at your fingertips. And I was just wondering, how do you stay up on top of everything and manage to be conversant about such a wide array of topics?
Well, number one, you're right. It's a very broad portfolio because our Air Force has large numbers of people, aircraft, facilities, global threats and global challenges. We have core missions of being able to strike and having space dominance and also mobility and intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, command and control, a lot of different topics. There's no real secret formula other than I have been in this business for 34 years, so I came into the job with a certain amount of background. And since that time, it's a matter of the great team that surrounds me. Another piece of advice I try to give to people is play to your strengths and make sure that you take good advantage of the team around you, because those are the folks who will build you up in ways to make you stronger, in ways that you're currently not as strong. So I have a great team that surrounds me. I try to be a good listener. I do my homework and I prepare. I especially prepare for important engagements with Capitol Hill, like going before and testifying before Congress, or doing a press conference, things of this nature, is good old-fashioned preparation that helps an awful lot.
Secretary James, I saw a speech last year. I'm going to change this around a little bit. You talked about a book that you read and you said that you liked. It was written by Sheryl Sandberg. It was called Lean In. Can you tell me what you liked about that book?
I thought the book was great. I thought it was very practical. I thought it had a great, it had both statistics and it had storytelling in it, so it was persuasively written. And it certainly talked to me. The part that particularly resonated with me is that women seem to take a back seat when it comes to negotiations for their own salary bonus and the like. And that women need to be a little bit more in the forefront with that. They need to do their research. They need to know what the market is like for their type of a job, and they need to state their case and don't be afraid to do so. So that particular one did resonate with me quite a bit. The entire book did. And matter of fact, of course, as I think many of the viewers know, Sheryl Sandberg has started a foundation with the same title, Lean In. And we have embraced her Lean In Circle approach very much in the Pentagon. Matter of fact, we're about to stand up several new ones in the Air Force. I'm going to be leading two of them myself. And we have some other senior women who will also be leading several of these Lean In Circles. So it's another form of mentoring. And of course, that's another reason why I like the book so much.
You're certainly practicing your leadership principles, which is, you know, not only talk the talk, but walk the walk. So thank you. You also, in the same speech, brought up another article. It was called Lean Back, and I had to search until I found it because I was okay, I need to learn about this. Now, in that article, it talks about sometimes that you can't have it all the time. Our guests constantly make that statement. You can have everything, but you can't have everything all the time. So have you had to make hard choices along the way in your career between your family and your career?
Well, the way I like to look at this as a sort of umbrella topic is there are times when you need to lean in and other times lean back, and it's kind of the rock and roll of life, or maybe you could say the zigzag of life, to use a phrase that I like to use. There are certainly times in my life where I simply had to tell the boss, I'm sorry, boss, I can't come in today, or I'm going to come in late, or I need to leave a little early because there's something really special, or there's a sickness with one of my children. Something of this nature. I have that to this day because although my children are grown and launched, I have a 91-year-old mother. And so there have been times that I have had to cancel my schedule and go to New Jersey and take care of my mother. So these things go, it's the cycle of life. So that's an example of maybe you lean back because family has to be cared for and it's really, really important. But then you lean in at other times when you are pursuing your career. I also want to say that I had my children when I was in my 20s. That worked out very, very well for me. My children were young when I was on the committee staff on Capitol Hill and when I was in the Pentagon the first time around. I had demanding jobs, but I will say I was not on call 24 hours typically in those jobs. As Secretary of the Air Force, of course, I no longer have young children. It would be extremely difficult with the amount of travel that I now do and the hours that I keep to have young children at this stage in my life. So I do want to, you know, give that recognition. I didn't have to make that choice. It's the way it unfolded for me. But I think there's where particularly women who have their children later in life and then the top jobs are coming their way. This is where it can be very difficult.
Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. Coming up, we'll ask Secretary James how she balances it all. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force.
Secretary James, your success is not only limited to your career, which has been fantastic, but you have a family. You mentioned that you have two children and a mom who's still living, and you've been active in so many different things. So how have you managed to do all that? How have you been able to balance it through those stages of your life?
The way I've always approached it, Gigi, is it's a matter of making priorities. So let me give you an example of what I mean. When my children were young, when they were born, and when I was on the House Armed Services Committee staff, my priorities, as you can imagine, were my children, my work, and my husband. Consequently, my priority was not keeping the cleanest of clean houses or becoming the best cook. I essentially had people help me with that. So I paid money and I had a lady come into the house and she would do the cleaning and she would take care of the kids while I was gone. And then when I was coming home from work, I came home from work. When you're on Capitol Hill, there might be happy hours you could go to. There might be dinners to attend. In those days, I did not do that. I simply came home because I wanted to see my children. So I didn't try to be everything to all people. I had my top three things, the top three things that were important to me, and everything else took a back seat. And also, we invested heavily in childcare expenses. Childcare is expensive, but it was our top investment. So maybe our car wasn't the best car, and maybe we didn't go out to eat as much as some other couples, but we were putting our money where the priority was. The priority was in the childcare so that I could work and have the fulfilling career as well as be at home. So that's the way it's always been, is to try to figure out what the priorities are at any given time in life. And certainly while the children were young and even teenagers, that remained the priority. Now the priority is a little different. My husband and I, we have hobbies. We, you know, the priority is our time together on weekends. And to the extent we can do things around town here in Washington at night, that's another way to be together and do fun things.
Secretary James, we've talked a couple of times about your leadership principles, but there's one umbrella theme throughout it. And you said it in several speeches I saw. It's about the people. What does that mean?
It's about the people because every great organization, if you peel it back and try to figure out why, it's always about the people. So if you got the right people in the right job with the right training, and if they're inspired and motivated, and particularly if they're working on issues that are more important than themselves, in all likelihood, the process, the procedure, the technology, the equipment, all the rest of it is much more likely to fall into place. So that's why I always start and end with people. Yes, you have to work on those other issues, but the people are what truly make the difference. That was the case in government for me, and it was the case in the private sector as well.
I've also heard you say you need to be a role model not only in the office, but at home. What does that mean to you?
At home or after work, be a role model at all times for the way you wish other people to treat you. And this is particularly important the higher up you go in the leadership ladder, and if you become a recognizable person, because people will see you at the grocery store in the evening, they'll see you in the mall on the weekend, and the way you conduct yourself, the way you speak to people, this gets recognized. So it's a little bit the golden rule, do unto others as you would wish to have done unto you, and make sure you're doing it both in and outside the office.
Secretary James, you've done so many great things in your career. As you've mentioned, you've been in the public sector, you've been in the private sector. So what's the next zigzag for you?
Oh, that's a hard question. That's a hard question. Well, I am honored and hopeful that I will continue to serve out through the presidency of President Obama. So that's about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more than that, because there usually is a little bit of a transition after a presidency. And after that, I'm just not sure. Hoping to take perhaps a little bit of time off and then explore what the next steps might be.
You think it'll be in the public sector or the private sector, or you don't really have any preconceived thoughts about that?
I don't have any preconceived thoughts. I mean, they're both fantastic places to be. And it all just depends. And I do want to spend more time with my husband. And we have a great new hobby, which I'm proud to tell you, we're boaters, and that's a lot of fun. So we've talked about taking at least several weeks on the boat and taking a cruise. So we'll figure it out in time.
Secretary James, if you were to go back and see your younger self graduating from college, what piece of advice would you wish she had to achieve the success that you had or even beyond in today's world?
I think I would advise myself to don't let anxiety overtake you. Things will work out. Just hold on, let it pass, whatever the bad thing is. Just try to keep your cool, focus on your health, get beyond it, and things will work out. Just show some persistence and keep working the problem, hang on there, and it will work out.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest has been the Honorable Deborah Lee James, Secretary of the Air Force. Madam Secretary, I want to thank you so much for sharing your background and your insights with us. You can learn more about the Air Force and Secretary James at their website, www.af.mil, or you can follow Secretary James' Facebook page. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.